Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Linda Kenyon. New warnings of flash flooding have sparked renewed fears and forced rescuers to suspend the search for more victims in Central Texas. CBS's Jared Eggleston is in Kerr County.
Local officials in Kerrville have already sent out several flood alerts, telling everyone that they need to get out of the water, get away from the water. That is as a system is poised to dump inches of rain on the area that has already been hit hard.
President Trump is threatening 30% trade tariffs on imports from Mexico and the European Union starting August 1st. Economic advisor Kevin Hassett explained why during an interview on ABC.
The bottom line is that he's seen some sketches of deals that have been negotiated with Howard Lutnick and the rest of the trade team, and the president thinks that deals need to be better.
People in Mexico are not taking kindly to this latest tariff threat. This man speaking through an interpreter.
I think it's a strategy designed to continue intimidating Mexico and to control us. But it gets us nowhere. It's like shooting himself in the foot.
1 year ago today, Thomas Matthew Crooks attempted to assassinate then-candidate Donald Trump during a campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. CBS's Nicole Skanga says a review found a number of security shortfalls, like this one.
Local law enforcement who first spotted Thomas Crooks, the gunman, was not able to get in the ears of federal law enforcement.
The president was grazed in the ear by a sniper's bullet. One supporter was killed, two others in the crowd injured. White House border czar Tom Homan tells CNN a federal judge was wrong to halt immigration arrests in Southern California, adding only lawbreakers have any reason to be concerned.
ICE is looking for those in the country legally, and we're still prioritizing public safety threats and national security threats. That's the priority.
The Trump administration has appealed the decision in the case, which was filed by immigrant advocacy groups who accused the Trump administration of systematically targeting brown-skinned people. California Senator Alex Padilla defended the decision on CNN State of the Union.
The fact of the matter is the vast majority of those being detained are the same people who were deemed essential workers at the end of the first Trump administration at the outset of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's a cruel, cruel irony.
A bipartisan push is underway in the U.S. Senate to impose new sanctions against Russia as the war against Ukraine drags on. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham spoke about it on CBS's Face the Nation.
We're going after the people who keep Putin in business and additional sanctions on Russia itself. This is truly a sledgehammer available to President Trump to end this war.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. Wisconsin's agriculture industry could see both wins and losses under the new federal budget. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
Climate change isn't a priority for the Trump administration, so the new budget redirects funds for farm conservation initiatives. Chuck Anderis with the Michael Fields Agriculture Institute says it lacks investments in key areas like technical assistance to help farmers implement conservation measures. Anderis predicts the gutted support and incentives that will go to large farms that need it the least will weaken conservation efforts and could have long-term implications.
And so you're having more runoff and more nitrates in the drinking water, but then you're also having birth defects in babies from the nitrates in the drinking water, and you're having huge medical costs beyond the devastating effects to human health from that.
Meanwhile, Wisconsin's new state budget does include some funding for programs that incentivize farmers to use conservation practices and reduce nitrogen pollution. And Dara says this kind of investment will help prevent flood damage, improve water quality, and make agriculture systems more resilient, all of which affect public health. As part of their agenda to curb government fraud and waste, the Trump administration has slashed staffing at agencies like the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. The new budget proposes cutting nearly one-third of additional staff, and Dara says that agency provides critical technical assistance to farmers, and the lack of support will create barriers for farmers who rely on its guidance. He adds the new federal budget also redirects Biden-era conservation funds that hadn't yet been used away from practices that would reduce greenhouse gas emissions on farms. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Areas of smoke drifting through the area today, so poor air quality in places. Mostly sunny skies, a southwest breeze with highs in the lower 80s. For tonight, smoke will continue to be found, mostly clear to partly cloudy, lows in the mid-60s. It's 78 at our studios.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday, we'll put a focus on Green Bay goings-on. We'll chat with Dr. Kristen Lyerly and preview the Jane Matinere Todd Alba Tour of Wisconsin.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, and I am your host. My name is Jim Santel. This hour and next hour as well. This, as always, is our weekly weekend review of all things justice-related, government-related, rule of law-related. We take our name, Amicus, sometimes referred to as Amicus Curiae, a friend of the court, but a friend of the community, providing you with helpful information to enable you to assess, to evaluate, to examine the world around us, including especially those topics in the areas of justice delivery and the rule of law. This weekend's broadcast, no exception to that commission. Delighted that you have chosen to join me and my producer, Max, for some portion of this weekend, and that includes your comments, your questions, especially your inquiries, your quizzical matters that you want to bring to my attention. You can do that in a couple of different ways. You can always call in at 855-752-4842. That number once again is 855-752-4842. Max always reminds me as well that you can be in touch with us by dropping a comment, your question into our chat box. And we encourage you to do just that. Be a part of our discussion, especially this weekend, as we have a great variety of cornucopia, if you will, of rule of law issues to discuss. Lots of things going on, some of them related to matters that we have talked about in recent weeks and months. Some of them brand new from all places on the face of the planet, including right here in the state of Wisconsin. What are we going to be talking about this edition of Amicus, a law review? We are going to start our discussion right here in the state of Wisconsin, talking about a latest important decision by our Supreme Court. Sounds wonky, I know. Sounds lawyerish, I know. And that's because it is both of those things. But it is also much more. It's also about administrative rulemaking. And yes, indeed, the balance of power authorities between the legislative branch and the executive branch, the Assembly and Senate and our governor's office, specifically talking about a major decision of our Supreme Court, once again split about who has responsibility for issuing, making, maintaining, enforcing rules in the state of Wisconsin. How is it that you can establish those rules, and how can you overturn rules that are presently in place? We'll talk about that. It also has as its core a significant LGBTQIA issue, and that is the roundly rejected notion of conversion therapy. That's at the core of that issue. And we'll talk all about what the Supreme Court did in both of those areas in just a few moments. We also have some other important news coming coming out of litigation here in the state of Wisconsin. A new lawsuit, another lawsuit, this one challenging once again the line drawing for our congressional districts, those folks we sent to Washington, D.C. to serve in our House of Representatives, not the Assembly here in the state of Wisconsin or the Senate. This is about congressional elections and line drawing for those. A new lawsuit. Taking on a different strategy, taking on a slightly different theory. It is fascinating. It is interesting. And it also reaffirms, from my perspective, this notion that, yes, indeed, it is good to develop a record on these cases. And by that, I mean starting in the trial court, where you can have a hearing and you can have evidence and you can present information to a judge or a jury about the merits of the case. That can be appealed then to an appeals court, ultimately getting to the Supreme Court, but not beginning in the first instance at the highest court. We see that a lot, or at least attempts to do that here in Wisconsin. We see it a lot with breakneck speed in these recent months and years. In the federal government, as well as our United States Supreme Court, takes on with greater rapidity this great number of emergency applications coming right to the Supreme Court to stop what's going on at lower courts before those lower courts have had the chance to do what? To develop the record I'm talking about. So we've got some interesting things happening here in the state of Wisconsin. New litigation, new Supreme Court decision. That's all right here in the state of Wisconsin. There are also things going on in other places of our nation, and that includes in Central California. We'll talk about a major decision by a federal district court judge just on Friday of this past week, telling the federal government that they cannot, in fact, engage in racial profiling, telling law enforcement generally cannot engage in arresting citizens, residents of Los Angeles based upon racial perceptions, and instead need to have the reasonable suspicion that must undermine, must provide a predicate for every single non-warrant-based arrest in America. We'll talk about the reason why that's important, especially in Los Angeles. Yes, once again, we'll talk about why that particular judge entered the order, the injunction that she did with respect to law enforcement. We'll talk about another injunction, this one grabbing major headlines as well early in the week. This one also from a federal judge. He is in New Hampshire, and he has, yes, once again, taken on this birthright citizenship issue and whether or not a single federal judge can enjoin, can stop the president's executive order of way back on the first day that he was in the first day in office of this present term, whether a federal judge can enter a national injunction. We know that the Supreme Court has said you can't do that. Amy Coney Barrett wrote in that massive order of a couple of weeks ago. And this judge in New Hampshire taking that on and saying, I understand the directive. I'm going to find a class of residents. And yes, as he says, citizens, newborns across the country who are subject to this executive order. And I'm going to stop the executive order as to them. And I'm going to do that by finding that they form a class. A class action is what was brought in front of him. He embraced that. He seized upon that. And he entered his order. Certainly not the last word there. Certainly not the last word when it comes to this overall issue of national injunctions, universal stoppings of things going on. And in particular, birthright citizenship. We'll talk about that. Then we're also going to talk about another major Supreme Court case. I know, you thought the Supreme Court was done with all of its major rulings. And indeed, it has issued 67 different major decisions since the term, which continues, began last October. In fact, they continue to issue emergency orders upon emergency applications by the administration. This one, again, from earlier just this past week, permitting the president to go ahead with one of his major landmark executive orders, instructing 19 different federal agencies, 11 of them cabinet level, to begin to downsize. And yes, you might think, gee, isn't this what the Musk team was doing? In part, sure, absolutely. This was an executive order telling all these agencies across the board to reduce the federal workforce dramatically. The Supreme Court just this past week, by a very interesting, very curious 8-1 split only Ketanji Brown Jackson, objecting to this. The Supreme Court saying, go ahead, Mr. President, you can do just that. And sure enough, within days of that order being issued, we've got reporting coming out of the United States Department of State, confirmed by our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, of thousands of people now being fired, terminated in the State Department, both there on C Street in Washington, D.C. and around the world, probably no fewer than about 3,000. Yes, three followed by three zeros, 3,000 employees of the State Department alone, probably in the next days and weeks, maybe months, going to be terminated from their jobs. We'll talk about what the consequences of that major Supreme Court emergency ruling, once again, without explanation, without description of the reason, what that contemplates for America, for the federal agencies going forward, why it is once again a major victory for the administration attempting, depending upon how you interpret this, either to change government dramatically, downsize it, attack some of these programs that are out there. And in that connection, we'll chat in particular about my own perspective about what happens when you minimize and reduce dramatically the workforce of the United States Department of State. I will recall some of the experiences that I had for about 2 years when I was in Iraq at the embassy in Baghdad, other places around the Republic of Iraq, with those State Department folks. I'll talk with you about why their presence there, understaffed dramatically. I know that sounds controversial. Understaffed, however, dramatically in trying to establish the republic, the democracy, that in fact, in the end, still exists today in the Republic of Iraq. They've got a parliament, they've got a president, they've got a prime minister, they've got a legislature, they've got people engaged in voting and elective politics there, in major part because of things that the State Department and its political entities and its democracy entities, and yes, I will immodestly say also the Department of Justice and our rule of law initiatives there also did a lot to promote. We'll talk about what the consequences are when you minimize and slash dramatically the role of the State Department, not just in Iraq, around the nation, and indeed in Washington, D.C., all of that coming out of the federal government just this past week. And then finally, we're going to spend some time talking about another favorite topic here on Amicus Law Review, and that is what's going on inside the Department of Justice. We'll begin with the announcement by our Attorney General. Her name is Pamela Bondi, of a major lawsuit. The Department of Justice, your Department of Justice, yes, that's right, is suing an entire federal district court, the District Court of Maryland, maintaining that its recent actions with respect to the deportations and a temporary stay on deportations while the judges there have an opportunity to review petitions challenging deportations. Your United States Department of Justice suing the entire district court, all the judges there by name, saying you're in violation of the Constitution, you cannot do this. We'll talk about what that significant piece of litigation brought in the Maryland court, now transferred, of course, to another district because the very defendants in that case are the judges in that Maryland court. We'll talk about that. If you're scratching your head, so am I. We'll talk about what that means. We'll also talk internal to the Department of Justice about many of the things that are also part of the rule of law news of just past week. We see that the Deputy Attorney General, Todd Blanche, and the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, this week beginning to fire more January 6 prosecutors. We know in the past that they have let go many of those who are on a probationary, non-permanent status. Now we see for the first time the termination of long-standing criminal prosecutors who have had the capacity before to engage in this kind of prosecution work. They have been fired this past week. We'll talk about what that means. We'll talk also about these reports about tumult generally inside the Department of Justice having to do with polygraph tests administered arguably to law enforcement supervisors, FBI supervisors around the country. Even more significantly, this apparent battle among the Deputy Attorney General, the Attorney General, maybe the Deputy Director, the Director of the FBI involving all sorts of things, including what happened inside the Department of Justice at the time of a major suicide. You recall that one well, that has animated much of our news. We'll talk about all that. We'll talk about some disclosures related to declarations and positions taken at the time of the president's decision to suspend the law. Remember this way back when on TikTok, that legislation to prohibit their continued involvement in American life. We'll talk about some things revealed inside the Department of Justice and more, all of that coming up on this edition of Amicus Law Review. Stay with us for that important discussion.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hi, I'm Ashley, a certified radio digital executive. With decades of experience working with small businesses and owning my own, does digital marketing make you feel overwhelmed? Sometimes there are so many choices and packages to choose from. You could just sign up for everything and the kitchen sink. But there's a better way. Call me at 715-496-0710 and I can build the perfect package for your business.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped four seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Jenna Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, your host this hour and next hour as well on a discussion of all things rule of law related. We are going to begin jumping right into our discussion this weekend, talking about things happening right here in the state of Wisconsin, not federal matters, although they're connected to them tangentially and directly in some ways. But we're going to spend most of our time in this next segment talking about two major things that happened right inside our state, both of them rule of law related, both of them about predicate issues, but actually having instruction for all of us with respect to larger topics about how we litigate, how we understand justice, how we administer that through the courts. Let's get right into that as well. You may recall well that we and other broadcasts talked a lot about this major decision of a couple of weeks ago, right before the 4th of July, the Supreme Court finding that this state abortion ban that was enacted way back in 1849, no longer in effect, the Supreme Court saying, even though it's been dormant for 5 decades, all sorts of things have happened in the interim to make it clear that the legislature no longer regarded that particular ban as being in effect. And because of that, all the subsequent litigation, all the subsequent orders about how abortion can, in fact, be effectuated and accomplished in the state of Wisconsin means that that 1849 law never in effect, at least not in the wake of the 2022 decision coming out of our federal Supreme Court that overruled Roe versus Wade, places in effect the Dobbs decision, which says there is no federal privacy right, no constitutional right to abortion. Now, our Supreme Court, a couple of weeks ago, our state Supreme Court saying that here in Wisconsin, that old 1849 law not resurrected, not revived, abortion legal in the state of Wisconsin because of all of the legislative actions by our Assembly, by our Senate in that period of time that make it clear that the law was not in effect. Now we've got another major case coming out of our Wisconsin Supreme Court that also has a lot to tell us about the rule of law, how we stand in America. This one having to do underlying the decision is all about a thing called conversion therapy. We'll get back to that in just a moment. It is significant as a core issue and what that means once again in the state of Wisconsin. But we're also going to talk about what the larger implications of this Supreme Court decision are. Wisconsin Supreme Court just this past week approving the decision by our governor, Tony Evers, to go ahead with a rule that bans conversion therapy. And that's the core of the decision. But it's actually more interesting and more complicated than that in both regards, both the substance of it and the procedural. Basically saying that the committee, a state committee, a joint committee, cannot effectively rulemake, that that's within the governor's purview, can't do that without the full consent of both houses of our state legislature. Supreme Court clearing the way for the state to permanently enact a ban, again, on conversion therapy, and a ruling, this ruling that at the same time gives our governor a whole lot more power over how state rules and procedures and practices are enacted. The court specifically ruled, again, right down so-called partisan lines, that a Republican-controlled legislative committee's rejection, its decision not to go ahead, not to approve the governor, the administration's rule on conversion therapy, that would effectively ban that practice here in the state of Wisconsin, was unconstitutional. Again, that ruling has major implications for conversion therapy, which, again, now continue to be banned in the state of Wisconsin, but also broad impact on how it is that power is delegated and relegated between the two various branches of government, the legislature and the governor as well. The legislature cannot block the enactment by rules of, announced by the governor that carry the force of law. Basically, let's go back to the core. What is conversion therapy? Where does this begin? Well, it is known again as conversion therapy. It's been out there, regrettably, for much too long a period of time. It is this scientifically discredited, virtually every, and probably I can eliminate the word virtually from that sentence, every single legitimate medical authority has discredited this notion, this practice of using some therapies to convert somehow LGBTQIA people to heterosexuality or traditional gender expectations, whatever those might be. The practice has been banned because of its medical inadequacy, the fraudulent nature of that practice in about 23 states in the District of Columbia. And there are an awful lot of folks out there that say that not only is it ineffective, but it's actually affirmatively harmful. Again, medical authorities saying this is not something that any forward looking and a significant entity, including states and municipalities, other units of government, should in any way embrace. Advocates seeking to ban that practice wanted to forbid this mental health practice and prohibiting professionals from pursuing it across the country. And they've been successful in doing that. Interestingly, as a side note, just in March of this year, the United States Supreme Court indicating that this remains, believe it or not, yet another issue that they're taking up, agreed to hear a Colorado case that challenges whether the state and local governments there can enforce laws banning conversion therapy for LGBTQIA children in that state. So this issue isn't going away. away anytime soon. But at least now in Wisconsin, by virtue of what the Supreme Court has done, that is to uphold the rulemaking authority of the governor and the administration to ban this kind of discredited therapy. Now it is banned in the state of Wisconsin as well. Interestingly, both in 2019 and 2020, the Wisconsin Professional Licensing Board, recognizing the inadequacy, the fallacy of this particular treatment, had, with the involvement of therapists and counselors and social workers and medical providers, proposed this rule that listed conversion therapy as unprofessional conduct, right? But the legislature's very powerful committee called the Committee for Review of Administrative Rules had blocked the proposed rule twice, most recently in 2023. The rule was effectively in order in 2022, took effect again in 2024 when the legislature adjourned without permanently suspending it. And that leads up to what the Supreme Court had in front of it this past week. We'll tell you what they did with that procedural history as Amicus Law Review continues.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief. New flash flood warnings force the suspension of the search for people still missing in Central Texas. CBS meteorologist Nikki Nolan is tracking the storm.
Over 9 inches has already fallen in parts of Central Texas, with more on the way.
European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says President Trump's threatened of 30% tariffs against the European Union and Mexico will not go unchallenged.
We have worked and now are ready to respond with countermeasures.
The tariffs are slated to begin August 1st. Today marks 1 year since the assassination attempt against then-candidate Donald Trump during a campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. He reflected on it during an interview with his daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, on her show on Fox News.
They should have had somebody in the building. That was a mistake. They should have had communications with the local police. They weren't tied in.
Yannick Sinner has defeated Carlos Alcaraz at Wimbledon. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
The Brewers win a thriller.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Brewers and Nationals wrap up their series here today. The crew with a thrilling 6-5 win over Washington last night. Milwaukee down 5-3, bottom of the ninth. Andrew Vaughn at the plate on FanDuel Wisconsin.
Finnegan deals. Vaughn, line drive.
Caleb Durbin later drove in Andrew Monasterio for the winning run. Manager Pat Murphy on the effort Monasterio has shown.
The great thing about having the right people, this kid every day says, I want to stay in the big leagues.
The Brewers have now won 6 in a row. The Nationals have lost 7 of their last 10.
I'm going to say, you got to keep your head up, you know, got to go back and do it again.
That's the Nationals manager Miguel Cairo with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Mariska Hargitay has experienced an almost unprecedented run as an actor on the show Law & Order Special Victims Unit. And now she has a director's credit as well. She is the creative force behind a documentary about her late mother, Jane Mansfield, called My Mom Jane. The Hollywood Reporter is now saying the documentary will be eligible for the Oscars since it's been revealed that it had a short theatrical run at a North Hollywood movie theater last week. My Mom Jane is available to stream on HBO and is getting very good reviews. Sarah Jessica Parker feels she had to defend herself for not endorsing a political candidate publicly. The And Just Like That and Sex and the City star told Nicole Wallace on her podcast she didn't believe social media was the place for quick political conversations. To her credit, Parker says she's not going to go into an argument unless she is totally educated on an issue. Imagine that. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be...
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Areas of smoke drifting through the area today, so poor air quality in places. Mostly sunny skies, a southwest breeze with highs in the lower 80s. For tonight, smoke will continue to be found, mostly clear to partly cloudy, lows in the mid-60s. It's 78 at our studios.
Time for the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hands a big win to the environment. The court ruled it's unconstitutional for a legislative committee to block rules created by state agencies. The decision means good environmental rules now face an easier path to getting to the finish line and becoming law. For years, legislative vetoes by a handful of legislators stymied a long list of environmental protections. After more than 30 years, the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program is going unfunded. Money for the legacy program was stripped out of the budget by the Joint Committee on Finance. The program helps preserve our state's wildlife areas and fisheries through land purchases and grants. Now that the budget has been signed, it's unclear how the vital program will continue, although there is talk of a standalone bill that would revive it. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maggie Dawn.
Matt Rothschild is in the guest host seat with me on Monday. We keep you up to date. Who's out and who's in? Is it Bongino and Patel or Bondi at the DOJ?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
My name is Jim Santel. This is Amicus, a law review on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. We are talking about a lot of things on this weekend's broadcast, including issues right here in the state of Wisconsin, specifically this major decision by the Supreme Court that does, in fact, permit the governor to go ahead with his ban on conversion therapy here in the state of Wisconsin, but also has larger implications for other issues as well in rebalancing, redelegating, if you will, reestablishing the proper roles of the legislature and the executive branch when it comes to who's in charge about setting rules and specifically how those are decided upon. Again, this major committee, the Committee for Review of Administrative Review, it's a joint committee of the state legislature, had tried to block, and in fact did block for a while, the governor's rule. That rule coming out of the Wisconsin Professional Licensing Board saying that conversion therapy, discredited, not effective, harmful, should not be a part of our health care here in the state of Wisconsin. Those who supported the committee said that this is not about the policy, but rather about the capacity of the legislature to decide what the law should be and what the rules in the state of Wisconsin should be. The Supreme Court said no. Supreme Court said that the legislative committee has overreached, has overdrawn when it comes to its authority by blocking a variety of state regulations during this administration, including most recently conversion therapy. It means the legislature in this area and others will not be able to block this policy and others. The specific decision issued by the majority of the Supreme Court, again, 4-3, right down partisan lines. It is too bad that we continue to talk about any court, including our state Supreme Court, our federal Supreme Court, any justices and judges out there by virtue of their political affiliations. Regrettably, that is sometimes the world in which we live. This one, 4-3 decision, authored by Chief Justice Jill Karofsky. She says that the law, this rule that was the subject of the committee's attempt to block it, a small minority of lawmakers, she said, should not be basically able to veto a rulemaking proposal of the executive branch. That's within the executive authority. She said that what they had done violated two fundamental concepts. And here's your rule of law. Here's your law school instruction for the weekend. She said it violated bicameralism. That is this requirement, as you well recall from your own civics classes, to go before multiple chambers. You have to go to the Assembly and the Senate and get them both to approve, to vote on things. That's bicameralism. And then also presentment. There's another word that comes from your past civics education. That's the requirement that once passed, once both of the houses of the legislature have passed on the legislation, bill has to go to the governor to sign. And in this case, no such thing happened. Stayed at the committee level. They expressed their disapproval of the rule. Not enough, says Jill Karofsky and the majority of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And for that reason, the legislative committee fails in its attempt to overturn this particular rule of the executive branch. Tony Evers calls it incredibly important, again, principally because of the LGBTQIA issue that is at its core. But also, he said, it prevents, again, this kind of thing, prevents holding rules hostage, he said, without explanation or of action or causing gridlock across the government. And, of course, there were equal cries of inappropriate decision-making by the Supreme Court on the other side as well. Significantly, once again, why is this a rule of law issue? The conversion ban therapy, plainly one of several rules that have been blocked by a legislative committee. Now that the Supreme Court has said, no, you can't do it this way. You've got to vote. You got to get the governor's signature. Other policies, other practices, other issues out there include things like environmental regulations, vaccine requirements, public health protections. So the full impact of this ruling, yes, with respect to conversion therapy, but also far beyond that in many other ways. Environmentalists, those involved with health and concerned about our general medical status in the state of Wisconsin, beyond public health protections, all those kinds of things and more. Now it's clear, once again, it was before, and now it's equally clear by virtue of what the Wisconsin Supreme Court has said just this past week, that when it comes to rulemaking, the governor has the authority. Here's the important footnote. Of course, the legislature can overrule that. They can, in effect, pass the very legislation that Jill Karofsky was bemoaning didn't happen here. They can do that by passing an override of the rules announced by the governor, can get that legislation to the governor's desk. He may well veto it, but you can do those kinds of things. It doesn't strip the authority of the legislature to act on any of these kinds of things, including things like public health care and environmental issues. You just have to do it right. And that's what the Supreme Court has said this past week. 4-3 ruling coming out of our Wisconsin Supreme Court. And then we've got this other piece of litigation, not legislation, litigation also percolating up from the state of Wisconsin just this past week, also with some very important rule of law messages and missions for all of us to consider. A new lawsuit, another lawsuit here in Wisconsin, seeking to redraw Wisconsin's congressional, the folks we send to the House of Representatives, congressional district boundaries. That lawsuit filed on Tuesday. And you're going to think, well, gee, haven't we heard this before? We have certainly seen what happened with respect to the parallel, the companion lawsuit, many years in litigation, ultimately resulting in new maps of Wisconsin's assembly and state line drawing, those districts. That has been remedied, at least in part, addressing some of the great concerns about gerrymandering for state elective offices. This one goes to our congressional offices, the folks we send to Washington, D.C. every 2 years, including November of 2026. A new lawsuit now challenging those lines as being unconstitutional, but under a new theory, which we will get to. This, of course, happens, the filing of this lawsuit. You may recall just about 2 weeks ago, the state Supreme Court declined to hear some other cases, two of them in particular, that also sought redistricting before the 2026 election. The latest lawsuit is different from those in two substantive ways, at least from my assessment it is, maybe even three in particular. Here's the first one. The lawsuit is brought by a bipartisan coalition of business leaders. And the reason why that is significant, of course, as we have talked before, what is the connection between business and the rule of law? Why do you want to have business leaders involved in government, including the courts, but also in the legislature? Well, we know that the rule of law and the administration of justice, whether it's legislative, executive, or in the courts, the rule of law is important to sustaining business, right? And if, in fact, you can rely, whether it's in the state of Wisconsin or other places, on the enforcement of contracts, maybe specifically in courtroom settings, but also by the legislature passing laws that are not
not necessarily favorable to business, but ensure that their interests are heard and supported. If, in fact, the governor, the executive, does the same kind of thing, if the government basically, I don't want to say is pro-business, instead of that, is of a view that business is a good thing and commerce is something to be embraced for the livelihood, our economic livelihood of our nation and of our state, then you've got encouragement for business to act, to move, to be present here, all those good things. So you've got a coalition, by the way, a bipartisan coalition, a subset of this first important point. It's Republicans and Democrats, businessmen coming forward and saying it is good business for us to have good representation from Wisconsin in the House of Representatives. An interesting theory, right, that business supports that on a bipartisan nature. The second thing that's important is, unlike these other lawsuits that seek to hopscotch over the lower courts, the district court, the circuit court, the appellate court, this particular lawsuit does it right. And instead of seeking immediate review by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, maybe ultimately by the United States Supreme Court, instead of going as directly to the Wisconsin Supreme Court on an original jurisdiction theory, it's out there. But again, the Supreme Court's saying, and those other lawsuits, go back and develop a record at the lower courts, have a trial, have evidence, have people come in and testify as experts, as lay witnesses, tell us what this is all about. That's the way our judicial system works. Have a judgment entered by a lower court that can then be reviewed by an appeals court. Typically, appeals courts in the state of Wisconsin and other places are viewed as error-correcting courts. They will look at lower courts and say, gee, you got this wrong, you got this right, and we will make a review of the lower court decision based upon the analysis of that lower record, and then ultimately comes to the Supreme Court to determine whether or not those lower court rulings are accurate or not. That's the way it should be pursued. And that's effectively, as I read it, what the Supreme Court has been saying. Go back to not square one, but the way that we have always done this in developing those records below. And sure enough, taking that instruction, this bipartisan coalition of business leaders file their case where? Not immediately in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, not seeking immediate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court because it is such an important issue. It may well be, and it certainly is, but they file it where? In Dane County, in the circuit court there, rather than directly with the Supreme Court, as those rejected cases saw in the witnessing of the resolution of those. It is significant that this lawsuit will therefore take a more lengthy journey through the courts. Again, the trial court, the Dane County Circuit Court, will schedule proceedings, pretrial proceedings, trial proceedings, presumably whatever the court decides on the merits of this, and we'll get to that in just a moment, that will ultimately go to that error-correcting court, the appeals court, to determine whether or not the lower court's decision was right. And maybe then, could be well into next year, maybe even beyond. Then the Supreme Court takes a look at all this to determine what will happen. Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, gee, Jim, that will mean that there's no way that all of this can be resolved by 2026, which is when the next congressional election is, for these very representatives from those congressional districts in the state of Wisconsin. And yes, that's right. And that is in part the reason why those other lawsuits were brought immediately to the Supreme Court, to get expedited action from the Supreme Court. Here, I would advocate that they're doing this correctly, regardless of what you think about whether or not these lines for congressional districts should be drawn, redrawn, how they should be crafted. It is good to develop for the interests of justice and the rule of law, good government, as we did in those other cases. It is good to develop this kind of record and have evidence and have people engaged in, if you will, the adversarial process to get to a result that may not be perfect, may not be exactly what you want, what I want, what all of us want, but nonetheless is a product of this judicial system. The Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy argue in their new lawsuit, again, in Dane County, beginning with a trial court, not at the Supreme Court, that Wisconsin's congressional maps, sending those folks to Washington, D.C., are unconstitutional, not because of racial gerrymandering, not because of political gerrymandering, but because of a cousin to those theories, if you will, because they are anti-competitive. They're anti-competitive. They're not promoting competition among the candidates for those positions. And therefore, they accomplish an anti-competitive gerrymander. Not surprising coming from business people, right? Who are concerned about competition. Things like the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Clayton Antitrust Act in our nation's history to ensure that, competition is encouraged. Those laws are supposed to be enforced by our Department of Justice, and indeed in the state of Wisconsin, we also have a Department of Justice that ensures there's competitiveness among businesses. That's the theory that these businessmen adopt and approach in their new lawsuit. And when we come back, we'll tell you more about a statistic that animates the lawsuit and what this is all about for the future of Wisconsin. We'll continue that discussion right here on Amicus, a law review.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously. The best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Smokey.
You're listening to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR. Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric Inc., Party Envy, Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Fireplaces, McCain, Stevens Point Brewery, Delta Dental, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Gamber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Solaris, Aspirus Health, and the Food and Farm Exploration Center. Listen to Raptors Baseball here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome into the Rafters pregame show here on WFHR. I'm Austin Thomas, and the Rafters taking on the Wausau Woodchucks, looking to salvage this two-game series against Wausau. And, well, the Woodchucks winning six in a row against the Rafters, and they currently have been off to a steaming hot start in the second half, 9-2-1. And they are in first place in the Great Lakes West. Wisconsin Rapids, though, a 10-game losing streak and looking to avoid a franchise-long losing streak. They've got to get a win today. And last game, it did not go their way. The Rafters dropping it against the Woodchucks here at Winter Field, 10-3. Jake Beauchesne and Kareem Arusevic both looked good again, but the pitching once again struggled late as there was a 6-run eighth inning to put the Woodchucks up 10-3, and that ultimately was too much for the Rafters to come back from. I mentioned it, Jake Beauchesne had a good game for the Rafters. Well, he's been on a good few games for Wisconsin Rapids, and he joins us as our pregame guest of the show today. So excited to have him joining us as we'll have a chance to talk to him about, you know, not just his play this season, but also how he got back to Wisconsin Rapids, a returner on the Rafters roster. And so a lot of you might know him from last season, and of course, he's already got two home runs on this year, looking to keep that rolling along as we get rolling here in game number two of the series against the Woodchucks. It's the eighth game of the season the Rafters have played against Wausau, And for the Rafters, they are trying to get one last win before the All-Star break to get them some momentum heading into the off time. And it's some much-needed off time as the Rafters are going to look to regroup and resettle. They'll turn back to Jeremy Jones their next game out, but that's not for another 5 days. It'll be on July 18th, next Friday. Is with the next game that the Rafters are going to play, and that'll be here at Witter Field. But the pitching matchup today, the lefty Seth Spencer back on the mound for his third time against the Woodchucks. Nolan Bernard was scheduled to go for the Woodchucks. However, they did make a pitching change as Braden Mazzucano will come onto the mound for the Woodchucks. So a left-hander taking over as Bernard was a late scratch for Wausau. That's a look at the starting pitchers, and of course we'll have more to come after the pregame interview, but Jake Beauchesne comes up next, and then starting lineups and a starting pitcher breakdown up next here on the Rafters pregame show on WFHR 97.5 FM 1320 AM.
Veterans, have you explored your benefits lately? The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs stands ready to serve Wisconsin veterans, their families, and their survivors. With our partners like your local county veteran service officer, we can help access the benefits you've earned and the support you need. For more information, please visit WISVETS.com. That's WISVETS.com. Message sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 5 years after the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 election, legal accountability is grinding along for some of the conspirators and those who wittingly or unwittingly supported them. But pardons may be in the wind, too. May 27th, a three-judge New York appellate court stripped Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Chesbro, an alleged key organizer of the swing state fake elector scheme, of his license to practice law in New York. June 16th, the alleged mastermind of the fake elector scheme, John Eastman, was recommended for disbarment in California. He can still appeal the decision. Also June 16th, a civil jury found MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell liable for $2.3 million for defaming former Dominion Voting Systems executive Eric Coomer. Dominion itself has a claim pending against Lindell, right-leaning news outlets, and several other Trump-alleged conspirators and collaborators. The Michigan Advance reported July 5th that a hearing on whether the trial of 15 of 16 Michigan fake electors should go forward has been moved to September 9th. A trial in Arizona is scheduled for January 5th, 2026, for the alleged fake electors and Trump associates, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Mother Jones reported June 4th that President Donald Trump's pardon attorney was considering pardons for the accused fake electors. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
Hello and welcome back into the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters pregame show here on WFHR. I'm Austin Thomas, and joining me on the show, it's Jake Beauchesne. And Jake, off to a pretty hot start. These past couple of games have been really, really good for you and included a couple of home runs. How's it been feeling from you at the plate?
Yeah, it's been feeling really good. I kind of took me a little bit to settle into my approach, and once I found that, slowed the game down for me, and I've been seeing the pitch a lot better.
You know, settling into your approach, what exactly does that include? Slowing down your swing at all? Just making sure that you're finding your pitches?
Yeah, so after, you know, not seeing live pitching in 2 months, coming out here and facing some really good competition, it was more of just being comfortable in the box again against a live arm. And, you know, the big turning point was to hunt the heater. And once I started doing that, I felt more in control with all my at-bats so far, so...
Well, your first home run of the season, it wasn't a great score in the game, you know, 6-1 at that point in time, but it was a monster moonshot to left field. How did it feel at that point in time, you know, trying to juggle the emotions of, okay, we're losing, but I also just smashed a home run?
Yeah, so it is hard at times to, even though the score may not represent, you know, how we want to go about our business, sticking with the approach regardless of what the score is, how the team's playing, and trying to be consistent with that. No matter what the outcome is or how the game is going.
Well, I know, you know, yourself, obviously, you're in a hot streak right now, but there's a couple of other guys who are really swinging a hot bat. You know, I talk about Junior Barajas, Hayden Carlson, and guys like that that have really been hitting the ball well, but still it seems like the offense is struggling to score runs. Why do you think that is, that everyone is still playing well offensively, but the runs just aren't coming on the board?
Yeah, with this losing streak we have going, it's hard to find, honestly, just a reason to keep pushing. And we all obviously want to win, and it's not fun losing. But we're going to hit a point where our offense is going to, from top to bottom, start hitting the ball hard, and it's going to click, and we're all pretty confident in that, and our pitching is going to back it up as well. So it's just a matter of time, and we're going to find a groove, and once we do, it's going to be a different kind of team.
Well, I think we all see that right now. The talent is obviously there, and it's just a matter of putting everything together and kind of just waiting for that moment right now. But obviously, you know a couple of other guys who came over from Saddleback. There was a core group of kind of four of you guys that all came over here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, starting to meld in with the rest of the team, how are you trying to kind of build up that culture into the spot where you want it to be for winning baseball while also still in this losing streak right now?
Yeah, the tricky thing is coming in the second half, it's kind of, we were just put in the spot where we had to, on a quick notice, meet everyone and kind of get to know everyone. So that in itself takes time to really get to know your teammates. It's not like you have a whole entire fall season to build a group of guys that all want to pull for each other. So it's just day in, day out, getting to know the guys, getting to know each other, what our strong suits are, what we need to work on. And that process in itself works into being a unit and a collective team. So that's just more time that's going to take. So,
well, I think one of the best storylines to talk about as well, not just, new team here, but it's the same team for you from last summer, one mm-hmm. of the returners to the Rafters. So you knew a couple of the returners as well, but also getting to meet some new guys. What is it for you here in your second league in the Northwoods League that you're hoping to get out of this summer? And not just that, what are you working on as well and hoping to kind of take your game to the next level?
Yeah, last year I came out here. I wasn't out here for very long. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks. And that being able to get my feet wet and come play out here for that short amount of time was a blessing. And I got to see some of the best competition. So right away I knew that I needed to come back out here this summer. And it put me in a really good spot going into my season last year at Saddleback, so I'm hoping it does the same for me at Seattle this year.
Well, that's really all the questions I've got for you. Anything else you want to add real quick?
That's it.
All right, yes, well, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Awesome, thank you.
All right, once again, that was Jake Beauchesne joining us on the pregame interview. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, it's time for starting lineups and a starting pitcher breakdown here on WFHR 97.5 FM, 1320 AM.